Chatting it up again, starting off a brand new week, Monday, March 18th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We took a look at a proposal in Hartford to outlaw so-called legacy admissions at Connecticut colleges, and Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill dropped by to chat about what's on his mind, including voting for third-party White House candidates. So you probably heard the term, now and again, legacy admissions, right? Legacy admissions when it comes to colleges and universities. And what that means is pretty simple. One of the factors that many universities will consider as to whether or not a young man, a young woman, whatever, college-age kid, a little younger, a little older, whatever. One thing that universities do and have done for years and years is to consider, hey, has any other family member come to this university? And the thinking is that if we continue, if we as that university continue the lineage there of a family who has had, you know, other people in the family go to Yale or go to Harvard or go to Quinnipiac or go to, UConn or go to other schools, that lineage will continue. And ipso facto, the donations and the tuition money will continue. In other words, family tradition will say, well, your father or your mother went here, your brother or your sister went here. So, you know, let's give this person their leg up as to whether or not they can get in here. Now, legacy admissions aside, or whether or not you think that that is the right thing to do, you have to understand that at least here in Connecticut, it doesn't break any laws per se, but some folks in the General Assembly have another thought regarding that. And we go to a story here in the Hartford Courant, and this actually was bandied about last week, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it. There is a proposal to ban legacy admissions across colleges and universities in the state. It passed out of committee on Thursday with overwhelming support, despite a lot of concern from both lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. The vote on Thursday last week in the Higher Education and Employment Advancement Committee, sounds exciting, doesn't it? 18-4, so that sends the bill or a bill in advance to the Senate floor. Now, here's the crux of this issue, and I think there are two different things you have to look at when you look at this issue. If the bill is passed, it would prohibit public and independent institutions from awarding preferential consideration to prospective students who have a familial relationship with an alumni or donor during the admissions process. And by the way, this is a story by Allison Cross on the Hartford Courant. The practice received heightened scrutiny after the U.S. Supreme Court outlawed affirmative action in June, ruling that declared that race cannot factor into the college admissions process. Now, committee chair, Democratic State Senator Derek Slapp, framed the proposed ban as one of many bills the committee hopes will expand opportunity for underrepresented students in light of the national ban on race-conscious admissions. So understand something here. And here's where this troubles me. And by the way, the question here to start is, are you in favor or not of legacy admissions? Or the question more properly should be, does a state legislature or any legislative body have the right to tell a college or university how to admit someone if, in fact, they want to admit someone using a legacy-based admission? In other words, a legacy-based admission doesn't, on the face of that admission, have anything to do with race or sex. It doesn't. It doesn't have anything to do with race or sex or anything like that. There is a supposition, however, by some that, well, if we let Joe or Mary in because Joe's grandfather or Mary's great-grandfather came here, that is automatically preventing perhaps someone of color from coming into the university. And you can't prove that, can you? Committee Chair Derek Slapp framed the proposed ban as one of many bills the committee hopes will expand opportunity for underrepresented students in light of the national ban on race-conscious admissions. So Derek Slapp and I guess the people voting for this saying, well, because the Supreme Court got rid of race as one thing you could take into consideration, we should also get rid of a family's legacy. Why? They're two different things. Now, I'm not saying I'm in favor of legacy admissions. I'm not. But that's none of... But why should any legislature or any lawmaker tell a college or tell an institution that they cannot take into consideration? Now, many people will say, well... You may say it takes it into consideration, Paul, but, you know, they're not going to say no if grandpa or grandma are a deep-pocketed donor. Okay, let's suppose that then. What if that big money that comes in through legacy admissions, what if that money helps the school in general? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Opponents argue on one side, says here again in this story in the Hartford Courant, opponents argue that legacy admissions disproportionately benefit white and wealthy applicants and perpetuate a system of inequity in higher education. Okay, now you can say that, but do you also have proof that if a white person gets in through a legacy admission, that it's keeping a black person out? You can't prove that. You could say, well, it may rain tomorrow, too. On the other side, supporters say legacy admissions pose no threat to diversity and that schools have every right to use legacy admissions to craft their student communities. I think they do. Now, on principle, I'm not thrilled with legacy admissions, but the thing is, I don't think government has any right to butt their nose in on this. Now, what they do have a right to do is make sure that that college or university is not discriminating. Now, this is the supposition here by a lot of people on this committee. Well, if you let somebody in through legacy admissions, somebody's being discriminated against. Really? Prove it. You can't. You can't prove it. Well, you know, yeah, well, I know what. You can't prove it. Well, if you let Mary White girl in because her grandfather and grandmother went here and he's a big donor, yeah. Well, you know, some black or Hispanic kid's not going to be able to get in. How do you know that? In fact, how do you know that because of a legacy admission, some college or university won't say, let's make sure we are also admitting enough minority candidates? According to federal admissions data compiled by the Education Reform Now Connecticut Group, six of the state's 23 four-year colleges give preferential treatment to legacy admissions. So who does it in Connecticut? Connecticut College, Fairfield, Trinity, University of Bridgeport, the University of St. Joseph, and Yale. Well, you know why Yale does it, don't you? You gotta be Stu Nod not to. Look, this is more feel-good stuff. I mean, could we stop this? Seriously. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Where does the government get off telling a school if they're not violating any federal discrimination laws or state discrimination laws, where do they get off telling a school they can't do something like this? Honestly, you may not like it, but it's nobody's business. Chris in Oxford's with us. Chris, how are you?
How are you, Paul?
Hey, what's up?
Not to mention, it's kind of a slap in the face of the families of the minority families that have parents that went to a school too as well. I mean, it's one of those things too that if you have a family member, you're going to be for legacy. If you don't have a family member, yeah, you're going to be against it. But, you know, I know I'm not the minority when I say this. I mean, I am so sick and tired of the government trying to control every aspect of our lives, between scanning license plates, telling us how to get into college, telling us, you know, you go for a building permit, you know, they come into your house like they own your home. I mean, and I, you know, I talk to a lot of people. People are just exhausted from the government telling them what to do, especially after COVID.
You know, and especially, and Chris, thank you, especially saying, well, you know, on this whole thing, yeah, we're you know, we don't want to give preference to Joey getting into school, even though his grandfather went, yeah, but how do you know that, you know, when if Joey gets in and they come from a good family, that the donations that will come from Joey or Mary's family won't set the school up better for more minority applicants? See, this is just the kind of thing where, you know, I read this really honestly. Seriously? Only because it's too late for law school. No, I'm kidding. Stop, Paul. Don't say that. My God. Law school would be so boring. You know, I'd be driving that Mercedes I always wanted, but, you know, wouldn't be as fun as this. Talking about the great stuff we do every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 right here on WICC, and checking in with our favorite people to talk to, including a guy that, man, he has written about a subject that I just love, Terry Cowgill, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, and, of course, the Connecticut News Junkie. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. It's good to have you on to start the week. How are you?
Oh, thank you very much. I just got back from my chicken plucking session, and I never plucked chickens, but I did work in a factory for, yeah, the Bose Corporation, yeah, assembling and testing and repairing loudspeakers.
Nice.
And I know what it's like to be a working stiff.
So you know woofers, tweeters, mid-range, crossovers, baffling, you know all that good stuff then, right?
Yes, and if you were really bad and they hated you, they put you on fiberglass detail.
Oh,
you,
my God!
Dump,
yeah,
fiberglass into the into the speaker cabinets, and that was miserable.
And in, and
I survived,
and hopefully not inhaling it. Yeah. Terry, got to tell you, you wrote something for Substack this week. This is one of my favorite topics, Terry. I'm done. Well, I'm not done because I got to come back to work tomorrow. But this notion of the two parties just screaming and yelling at people, Terry Cowgill, if anybody ever thinks, hey, I'm not thrilled with candidate A or B, maybe candidate C or D is better. But this whole thing, Terry, that we hear people screaming from the mountains, oh, my God, you're wasting your vote. Terry, thank you for writing what you wrote because it drives me nuts.
Yeah, well, as you can tell, it drives me equally nuts, I think. Because and one of the things that one of the points that I made in order to show that this is just ridiculous is, you know, over the weekend, last weekend, pardon me, Michael Smirkanish, you know, he's sort of a centrist guy.
Yeah.
He hosts,
mm-hmm,
a show on,
mm-hmm,
CNN, and he had Dick Gephardt, you know, used to be the House Majority Leader, and he's a partisan Democrat. And he basically was saying, oh, this is, you know, you can't vote third party. The stakes are too high, you know, and you can't risk putting Donald Trump in the White House. First of all, it assumes that any third party candidate is going to peel off more votes from Democrats than Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even clear. But secondly, can you imagine a scenario, let's say 4 years, 8 years, 12 years later, Dick Gephardt says, you know what? The stakes aren't that high right now, so go ahead and run a third party. He would never say that, you know? And so I think it's like the boy who cried wolf. Maybe it would be dangerous to have Trump as president again, but they say that every time. So I can't take anything they say seriously about this. All these party stalwarts and all these people are faithful and believe in the two-party system. I can't take anything they say seriously on this.
No, you're right. You're right. And the lengths they go. I read a story last week that the Democrats are now have this special unit. They're revving up, Terry, this special unit that basically they're tasked, Terry, with going out to destroy Jill Stein and Cornel West and RFK. RFK Jr. And I'm not surprised, because in a lot of these polls, Terry, you've seen the same polls I do. RFK is getting 9, 10, 12, 15%. Maybe, Terry, they should look in the mirror instead of trying to take the air out of RFK Jr.'s tires. And you don't have to agree with him or disagree with him on whatever. Maybe it's time to look in the mirror. That's just my thought.
Yeah, I agree, because really, if the two parties were doing their jobs, then there wouldn't be this the third party movement. And we have two candidates that almost half the electorate does not want. And that's a huge statistic. And it's very telling, I think. But no, I don't think the two parties are going to learn anything from this. I mean, I lived in Canada for a while, you know, it has three major parties.
Sure, yeah.
And nobody ever says, oh, you know, you got to vote liberal or conservative.
Yeah.
You can't vote the new Democratic Party, which is the third one.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever says you're wasting your vote by voting for those guys. It seems to be uniquely American as a phenomenon.
And Terry, I've talked about this numerous times. Imagine the average American, as much as we love our country men and women, imagine the average American. You talk about Canada with basically three parties, give or take a fringe here and there. You imagine the average American voter, Terry, that you and I might know, walking into a European election with 10 or 15 parties on a ballot there, and the notion of having to form coalitions, their hair would fall out of their heads. Their eyes would explode. They wouldn't know what to do. They may be in permanent vapor lock. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. No, I can't. And you know, it's even more bizarre when you think about it, because I know in Canada, you don't even vote directly for the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
You vote for the party.
Yes.
Right? And then whichever party gets the majority or the plurality in parliament is the one that governs and appoints the prime minister. But most people don't really understand that. It's a completely different system than most other countries have. But we are a constitutional republic, and like it or not, we're stuck with it. It's definitely not going to change.
The other thing you wanted to touch on today, Terry, TikTok. This is fascinating. An overwhelming House vote, a split among our House contingent. Rosa DeLauro and Joe Courtney want TikTok to go away, kind of. It would be an offer to buy them. And Jim Himes and Johanna Hayes and John Larson voting against it. Larson, interesting, because he's the ranking member and could become the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. But, Terry, this a lot of people are kind of misunderstanding what's going on here.
Well, yeah, I think there is this. First of all, it's not a ban. All right. So I don't like the way it's been framed by most of the news media.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a forced sale. Right. So if ByteDance does not sell TikTok, the American version of TikTok, then it would be banned. And it's for that reason, I think the sale will definitely go through. I think they will sell rather than get banned, because if it's banned from the U.S., they get nothing for it.
Yeah.
So I think they will sell. The other thing is, you know, some of the TikTok's apologists say, oh, well, it's the Chinese government doesn't own it, which is true. They don't own it.
Yeah.
It's owned by a group of Chinese investors. It's also owned by some American investors. Including a guy, I believe his name is Yass, Y-A-S-S, who is also a major Republican donor,
uh-huh.
Which could explain why Donald Trump did his
flip-flop
on. Yeah, yeah. So there's a whole lot of different things. But no, China's government has a very well-documented history of treating the companies that operate out of China, and TikTok's office, corporate office is in Beijing, as extensions of the ruling party.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so concerned about the data. You know, everybody's saying, oh, they're going to get a hold of our data. I think even if China really wanted the data, there are these illegal data brokers out there who
mm-hmm.
sell all this stuff. I think they can get the data. My concern is it was with the algorithm
yeah.
and what shows up and what doesn't. And maybe it's just a coincidence, but all of these things that are unflattering to the Chinese, like Tibet and the Uyghurs,
yep.
they're very hard to find on TikTok. But other things that the Chinese government likes are very easy to find on TikTok. Now, is that just a coincidence? I don't know. But no. I do think that they have a great deal of influence over TikTok, the Chinese, the Communist Party of China. And so I would love to see TikTok or ByteDance divest itself of it's the U.S. portion.
Yeah, and Terry, before we get to our last topic on real estate, and I have some realtors that aren't really happy in my circle of friends, but what I think is really disingenuous, Terry, is this argument that to go through with this and get rid of TikTok, it's a First Amendment violation. No, it's not. Nobody is saying that you can't say something. What I think people are saying is if you want to have a First Amendment, you can do it anywhere else, not on a platform owned by one of our avowed enemies. So I think the framing, Terry, I don't know how you feel, but the framing of this as a First Amendment issue, to me anyway, you may disagree, is complete garbage.
No, I mean, the First Amendment basically is freedom of speech. It's saying that, the government can't censor your speech.
Mm-hmm.
And there are legal remedies if you think you've been wrong. There's defamation law and other things. Classified information and top secret, that's different. But in general, no, I mean, I would agree with you. I don't think it's a First Amendment issue at all to say to a company that operates from an enemy country, we're not going to let you operate here because we don't like, you doing what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stop operating here, we'll give you fair market value, or we'll find somebody to give you fair market value for your assets. So, no, I don't see that as a First Amendment issue at all. We very much agree on that.
And, Terry, finally, you note something here that's been in the news. The real estate business and the real estate agents and brokers, they may get a major shakeup here. What's going on with that?
Yeah. Well, the Wall Street Journal headline really grabbed me. It said, almost no one pays a 6% real estate commission except Americans.
There you go.
And, no, that's certainly true. And I wondered, how did this happen? And basically, it's the National Association of Realtors, which is, an industry group that sort of enforces these rules. They were sued multiple times. So this is the settlement of several lawsuits. This notion, because you look at real estate commissions in other countries, they're much lower.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that happen? Well, nobody really knows, except that it looks like, this National Board of Realtors may have been kind of a monopolistic force, and that's why they were forced to suspend these rules or loosen them. But, I don't understand why you have to do this. My wife and I bought our first house. We did it directly through the seller,
mm-hmm.
and so nobody paid a commission to anybody. We had to hire lawyers to represent us.
Sure.
But I don't know why that can't be done better. And, it just adds to the cost of buying and selling a house when you have to pay these people. Sometimes they do a lot of work, marketing and stuff, so they do deserve to be compensated. There's no question. But it looks like they had monopoly power, and that's why this ended as it did.
All right, all good stuff. Check out Terry Cowgill, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, and on the Connecticut News Junkie as well. Terry, have a happy week, and we'll check with you next time around. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, Terry Cowgill there.